This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our radio Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day. And of course, we're streaming live at the same time at prairiepublic.org. And the shows are archived there after they are broadcast, so they're always available at the same place. And today, our show is starting with a very interesting topic and a person who's pretty well known in the state and certainly in the Fargo-Moorhead area, Joe Burgum. He's recently back from India, where he attended an ashram, and Ashley Thornburg and I are very curious about this, Joe.
Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You visited this ashram to study something called Gandhi 3.0. What is Gandhi 3.0?
Yeah, so Gandhi 1.0, maybe start there, is really this Mahatma Gandhi and the work and his life as an individual who said that my life is my message.
And he was a famous nonviolent activist.
Absolutely. I mean, really, really sort of pioneered a lot of incredible things in the 20th century and arguably one of the most important people of the 20th century. So Gandhi 1.0 was Gandhi, one to many. 2.0 was Gandhi's successor, an individual named Vinoba Bhava. And he was one-to-one. So he walked across India and was responsible for the land gifting movement. So would go to wealthy landowners and ask them to treat him as their son and to give a sixth of their land away. And so millions and millions of acres were given to those that were poor. So then he then gave that land to them. So that was 2.0, one-to-one. And the idea of 3.0 is many-to-many. So Web 3.0, this opportunity that I can interact with many people and that all of you are interacting with many people, or that, you know, I'm here today speaking on the radio about love and compassion, the life that Gandhi led. That wasn't something that either of these individuals were able to do at the time. So really, how do many-to-many networks influence and change the world?
What is an ashram?
The word really means a community or community space. In this case, much of our time was at Gandhi's primary ashram in the city of Ahmedabad. So it was where he spent 15 years really living the principles of nonviolence and sort of hard work, sort of dispelling some of the hierarchical class systems that India had around untouchability and what certain people would do or wouldn't do and the role that women had in a household. So really sort of a community of values. And there were 78 other people there at the ashram with Gandhi and started the Salt March, which really led to Indian independence, was where this ashram sort of played an important role in history.
Gandhi was born a little over 150 years ago, so his influence still reverberates.
What did you know about him going into this?
Upon receiving the invitation, I went and started doing research and learning more about Gandhi. Watched the 1982 film, which is a fantastic movie. And after spending some time at the Gandhi Museum and talking to some Gandhian scholars, I mean, isn't quite relevant. It really is on point. And trying to learn more about a man who I think for a lot of people my age sort of know him as an inspiration and, oh, that guy with the quotes. I think that you could ask a lot of peers. So, you know, really amazing to dig deeper. And I arrived home on Martin Luther King Day, which I thought was incredibly fitting given the work that Gandhi did and the role that he had on Dr. King. And Dr. King is quoted as saying, you know, God gave us the values and Gandhi gave us the tactics.
And they were both assassinated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the significance of being invited, and what was the theme, I guess, of this particular ashram?
You know, they talked a lot about sort of the synergies of maybe unlike groups of people. I mean, I was at a gathering with myself as an entrepreneur, as a community builder. There were nuns from the Philippines. There were farmers from Vietnam. There were monks from France, as well as tech moguls and other entrepreneurs.
So 78 people from all over.
Were coming and spending time. So it was really that sort of mixing pot, or sort of that diversity of perspective coming together and really centered around compassion and love. I went into it thinking I was going to something where it was really going to be sort of a leadership development, really Gandhi as a leader. And it was much more Gandhi as the man. And the values that he lived his life by, and that it wasn't necessarily about show and sort of this incredible impact. It was about truth and living with compassion and the ripples and impact that can have on others.
People were invited to this. This was an invitation only to go to Gandhi 3.0. Why you?
Yeah, that was I reflected on that going over there, and it was interesting because I wasn't alone in terms of people getting there and saying, you know, why me? And I feel really fortunate that I've had friends and mentors that have looked after me have really tried to create opportunities for me. One of those mentors had an opportunity to go to this gathering a number of years ago, and so suggested that I go. But I'd like to think that it comes back to community. There were a lot of people there that were doing really amazing things, but I was surprised that I was one of the few that was really talking in a vernacular of community. How do we support community? How do we build community? What are the needs of people and places, and how do we add vibrancy and quality of life? And I felt special in that I could bring that lens, and particularly from a rural community. There weren't many people that were there from places that are rural or that have the challenges that we do in our state.
Joe Bergram is a community organizer in the Fargo-Moorhead area. He just recently returned from India, where he was attending Gandhi 3.0 at an ashram. India is a very diverse country, has many, many, many religions, but it's predominantly Hindu. Is this like a Hindu experience?
Not at all. I think one of the things that Gandhi and his nonviolence, and really if you look at sort of where he learned and the texts that he learned from, it was incredibly diverse in terms of the background, whether that's, you know, the Christian or, you know, Muslim histories or other informative texts. Even Tolstoy really informed Gandhi and sort of his thinking. And so it was really refreshing, I think, instead of something that was trying to be really secular. I think we often try to sort of neuter religion from everything that we're doing to say this is how we make it inclusive or this is how we don't offend anyone. And instead, there was really an honoring of, you know, seven or eight major religions. You know, we'd start every morning with a prayer from every religion. And, you know, when we had these community gatherings with the public, you know, we'd have different individuals from our group share a prayer or a message from each of those different religions. And I thought that was a really refreshing perspective, and that by maybe having none, that isn't necessarily the way that we add inclusivity. It's how do we acknowledge those that exist and find the similarities really around love and caring for one another as sort of brother and sister on the planet.
Well, I want you to expand on that, starting with a prayer from major religions. Then what? How did you spend your time at this retreat?
It was a very light agenda. I think most people would see it and say, you know, what did you do all day? And despite on paper the days maybe looking light, they were incredibly full in terms of the time we spent together. One of the things that I've taken back that I thought was really interesting is that every time we gathered, we would take a moment of silence, and maybe not something necessarily on radio that we want, but the power that silence has in really creating space amongst a group of people to be together to think about compassion, love, gratitude within that pause. And I think that we have so much stimulus around us in the 21st century. You know, we're distracted, we're anxious, there's all this going on, and the power to really pause and to slow down. And I think prayer brings that for many people. I think to go to church or to find a spiritual space or a meditation, or, you know, it could be going to your yoga class, you know, that finds space for us to be able to slow down. And a big part of this gathering was bringing people together and allowing them to slow down.
As I hear you describe this, it reminds me of a phrase that's been current for a few decades now, servant leadership. Is that what this is about?
I think in a big way. I mean, you look at what Gandhi did in his life, and a lot of it was about that humility and servant leadership. One of the things that was really moving for me is that there were about 38 of us from around the world that came to this gathering, and there was about an equal number of volunteers there that were hosting us. And these were people that were volunteers in the service-based community, but also business owners. I mean, individuals running large organizations that were taking time out of their schedule and being away from family over a holiday to host us. And really the humbling nature of that level of compassion. On the final day, we did a meditation called Three Steps and a Bow. You take three steps and then you kneel and bow, and take three steps and kneel and bow. And for myself, in that meditation, it was very blank. There wasn't much going through my head, just really grateful to be there, and walked through the gardens and got to the end of the line, and the volunteers were there, and we stepped into a bath and they washed our feet, and I stood up and I looked at all the volunteers and they knelt and bowed at me. And I broke down in tears, because it was really, you know, why me? You know, to feel this level of service from individuals that I had never met before was so moving, and to have that space of the silence, and then to see that and to be greeted with that really inspired me back to sort of my work from Fill the Dome, or being involved in student leadership, or even the work we're doing with Folkways, which is this opportunity to serve, and that it really is a privilege to serve others, and that, you know, to live is to serve is to love, was something that we came back to.
The importance of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that an experience like this can take upwards of the rest of your life to digest, what do you plan on doing with this experience? How will you incorporate it into the work that you do?
I've been thinking a lot, both at a personal and a professional level, and in some ways feel fortunate, in other ways maybe not always, that I have little bifurcation between what I do publicly and what do I do personally, particularly with things like the farmers market and Chris Kinomart, where that's me and the projects that I've loved to be able to create. So at a personal level, I've been thinking a lot about mindfulness, and really how do we continue to have a discussion about mindfulness in our everyday life. And I think it has to do with when we pick up our phone or when we're scrolling or even in our discourse, is how do we take a step back from ourselves and say, you know, am I being curious? Am I learning? Am I being empathetic? You know, where is this energy coming from? And trying to think about, you know, where does that manifest in a bigger way? At a professional level, something I've been thinking about for a while that really relates to this idea about how do we create a sense of belonging is, you know, within my work and our organization, how do we really reach the edges of our community? You know, how does love and compassion, shared experiences and belonging, how do we prevent loss of life? You know, how do these shared experiences help us prevent, you know, thankfully we haven't had one, but, you know, a mass violence in our state? And how do we really take the time to slow down and at a personal level when we cross someone's path to have that awareness to say, I need to spend another minute with you. You know, I sense something. And that doesn't come easy. But I think that if we all take that time, that's how we reach individuals that feel so isolated and so alone and so detached that they don't feel that their life is worthy anymore.
Well, there's a stereotype about the people where we live, Germans from Russia or Scandinavians. They're stoic, you know, they don't share their feelings necessarily. Well, talk a bit about that.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing. I mean, it's, you know, I laugh because there's, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes and a lot of ways to go about it. You know, I think that we live in an age when, you know, there's more discussion about it than ever. You know, that our Secretary of Ag is talking about, hey, farmers, if you're feeling isolated, reach out. I mean, that is a profound thing that we live in an era where we have an elected official that's talking about mental well-being in that way. You know, that our hockey groups are getting together. I just saw this in the paper and talking about mental well-being. You know, I think for me and our work with Folkways and this idea that it's really through culture that a sense of belonging is developed is that, you know, it may not be someone expressing their feelings, but it might be someone saying, you know, hey, I really like coming to the farmer's market and finding the seat. You know, or I go to the cafe and I sit in this cafe and, you know, when I run into someone, it really makes my day. And I think it's those little moments because we don't always know the impact we're going to have on someone. One of the individuals that we were spending time with who was a really amazing, just the way that he moved and the energy and the work that he did with the students in the slums was just beautiful in terms of his peace of mind and his space. But he said that he doesn't necessarily want to know the impact that he's having. Mm. He wants to be a conduit, and that it's, you know, sometimes it's the outcomes or the metrics that gets in the way of the ego. And so that he is really just sort of, how do I be a conduit for the change that I have? And we often hear stories or anecdotes of, you know, the little lady that lives across the street, and you get up every day and you smile and you pull out her trash and, you know, this incredible thing, and that goes on for 15 years and you might not even know this individual, you know, and she dies and the kids say, hey, you know, I just wanted to thank you. You know, we're out, you know, reading through her mother's notes and she wrote about the impact that you had on her and brightening her day. I mean, I think those are the beautiful moments that we don't know how we make someone feel, even in this stoic society.
The examples that you're giving are very much face-to-face human contact. And you mentioned at the very beginning, Gandhi 1.0 was Gandhi, the person, interacting on a one-to-one level. And then broadening that out now to Gandhi 3.0, many-to-many. And we live in a very different society than when he was assassinated in 1948. Let's just throw out the word the internet. How do they approach this blessing and a curse that is the internet?
Yeah, it's a big question because I think that we've gone through just absolutely exponential changes. You know, I don't believe that in the last 6 years as a society we've degraded to a level of sort of unbelievable bullying or meanness, or that, you know, we've devolved as a society. I think part of it is the platform, and that the platform lends itself to that level of discourse, that when we're agitated and angry, we're impulsive, and so we go and tweet, and that, you know, that tweet then gets retweeted by those that are also angry and agitated. And so
echo chambers.
So I think there's something to be said about the context of the platform that has lent itself to that. One of the things that Service Space does is the daily good emails. They've been doing them for many years, so it's just a simple email, a quotation, a thought of the day that ends up in your inbox to really sort of, you know, the daily good. I was thinking and reflecting back to my days in high school and how service and service leadership and student leadership was such an important part of that. But we had a lot of work at the time at Oak Grove around bullying, and it was early cyberbullying, you know, early instant messaging, MSN, AIM Messenger, and it was really peer-to-peer. You know, there were adults that helped lead it, but it was students saying, hey, this is how I felt when someone said that about me online anonymously. And I think that there's a level of accountability and empathy and compassion that we need to bring forth, which is, if my grandmother's going to see it on the front page of the paper, I'm probably not going to say it. Well, I'm probably not going to say it online if that's the mindset I bring to it. And that was something that we were taught as young people and students. But this disassociation that the platform brings, I think, really allows us to be angry or mean or to say things that we would never say in line at the grocery store if someone cut us off. And maybe we are in the back of our head, and maybe there's something to be said about that. But I think it's you know, conversations like this where we say, how do we elevate it? How do we bring compassion to this platform? Or how do we say, you know, maybe Facebook isn't the tool that we thought it was, and maybe it's not going to be the thing that's going to carry us into the next decade, and that there is something to be said about showing up and going to the coffee shop and having a conversation or a debate in person with someone.
Well, when you're at an ashram and there's this immersive spiritual thing that's going on, how about the practical objective of getting together like that? Was there a goal for this particular gathering?
You know, genuinely not. You know, I think often you can go and it can be, you know, I'm looking to, you know, deepen my practice in yoga, or I'm looking to learn this, or you sign up for sort of a enrichment activity. And this invitation was very broad, and really in what I would call an emergent approach, which I think is something that isn't necessarily always elevated in the West. We're very metrics goal, you know, what are our performance indicators? And so we need to kind of keep things ticking along. But this idea of an emergent approach is, you know, what happens when a group of us get together and just start a conversation? What happens when we start getting together on a weekly basis and having a conversation based in values? What might emerge? And that conversation or gathering isn't necessarily to create a project or to solve a problem, but that through this gathering, it was the ripples that sort of come out of it.
Well, were you changed or in a way you didn't expect by doing this?
Yeah, I believe so in a deep way. You know, been reading more as I've gotten back. And, you know, I think from a definition sort of standpoint, you know, one of the things that describes a spiritual experience is lack of words. And right away when I got back, people said, well, how was the experience? I was like, it was really good. Like, really good, you know, you have more to it. And, you know, I've had to take some time to sort of compile thoughts and stories and notes. But it was an incredibly meaningful experience to spend time in that way and to be that slow and mindfulness. And to have time to breathe into the day and to share and learn from so many wonderful people.
How will this change your yoga practice?
It has already, I would say. You know, I think letting go, I think that detachment, I think, is something. And not detachment in an apathetic sort of way, as we maybe would define it. But I think, you know, realizing that we live outside of the actions that we take. And that, you know, the posture, the pose that we sit in doesn't define us necessarily. And that it's in doing it that something as good is happening, not necessarily the outcome.
Will you stay connected to these people that you experience this with?
Yes, I hope to and intend to. There's been a lot of good chatter online amongst the group in sort of a thread format and people sharing photos and inspirations and reading. So it's been really great to have that sort of insight from all of these wonderful people and many of them that were much older. So I feel grateful to continue to be able to be mentored and learn from those that have much more life experience.
Will you have the opportunity to be a mentor?
I hope so. One of the quotations that was talked about a fair bit was this idea of it's not what we're doing, but who we're becoming, which I thought was interesting in that we, for myself at least, you know, often caught up in what am I currently working on or what are the goals? You know, this is what's happening in the next quarter or the next 12 months. And as someone that has a strength of vision personally, I often overestimate what I can get done in a year or what my team is working on and underestimate what we get done in 3 to 5. And I look back on the last 5 years at something like the Red River Market, and our purpose was really about a space for community to come together. And I become emotional thinking about the joy that we've brought into this community and having a space like that on the weekends for people to celebrate with one another and local music and local food, or just be. Just come and sit in the sun.
It's become a wonderful way to spend a Saturday. Joe Burgum just returned from India after attending an ashram with the Gandhi 3.0 objective. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Up next, Mark Trahant has a commentary.